Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Five-hour energy. Yo. When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, we'll do our Week 10 Circle of Swarm in about 20 minutes or so. I've got some names jotted down. I'll see if they match up with the names of Seth C. Payne that he's got. But we each pick three each week. Circle of Swarm based on past performance with a sliver of hope that these will be the swarmiest of players for the game coming up on Sunday. They're going to need to swarm on Sunday. This just in to beat the Detroit Lions. Lions are maybe the best team in football right now. In my opinion, they are the best team in football. So we'll talk about that. The new win totals are out. The revised win totals for all 32 NFL teams are out. These are always fun to look at because the outlets that put these out typically will tell you, hey, this was their number at the beginning of the year. Here's what it is now. Some of the more hilarious ones are like the Cleveland Browns, who were like 8.5 at the beginning of the year. You know, now that I think they're 4.5 now, something like that. You know, some teams have it's shifted drastically. The Texans actually, for all the hand-wringing over the inability to protect C.J. Stroud, justified, by the way, justified hand-wringing over this. The Texans' season win total projected, that you can bet on over or under, Seth, has actually gone up. From before the season, it was 9.5 before the season. It is now, because they're 6-3, it is 10.5 now.
Well, it's been 10.5 for a while. Yeah. It was once they got off to once they jumped out to a head start, you kind of look at it and like, okay, they've gotten past the first few games. There's a good chance they'll be 10.5. I was kind of wanting to see if with some of the recent lackluster offensive play, if it was going to go down, especially with Nico Collins and Will Anderson out this week and playing the Lions. Yeah, they still don't face. They've got some real studs coming up still, obviously. The Ravens, the Chiefs, the Lions, but they also still are in the AFC South and they're going to play some duds.
Well, and they to me, there's 8 games left and they're 6 yeah. they're 6-3. So they need to win 5 to get over the total. My prediction before the season was 11-6. So, I hate what's happening with the offensive line right now. I hate it. You guys, if you listen to this show, you know that. I hate it. The fact of the matter is, I feel pretty good about my prediction coming true. And it's because of this. As you just pointed out, there are 8 opponents that they've got for the remainder of the year, and one of them they play twice, the Tennessee Titans. They're in 2 buckets. They are either elite, elite football teams, or they've got some major, major issues that they're dealing with. There's really no in-between team. There's no there's no Broncos who are 5-4 and on the fringe of the playoffs. Like the Colts aren't on the schedule anymore. You already played them twice. There's none of these middling could go this way or could go that way. The 8 teams the Texans play are either elite level Super Bowl contenders, Detroit, KC, Baltimore, or they are teams that are dealing with season-ending quarterback injuries, potential season-ending quarterback injuries, Will Levis's existence, Tua's brain possibly turning into mush at some point over the next month and a half. You know, like, so. And by the way, the Dolphins are a non-factor right now. Like, Dolphins lose a couple more games, they may let go of the rope by the time the Texans are playing them, you know?
Right. There's five games where the Texans should be favored, and then there's three games where, man, who the heck knows what happens in this? The Lions being one of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you look at the Cowboys, the Titans, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, the Titans again. Mm-hmm. Okay. Texas should be favored. Still hard to win the games you're favored in, but then they've got those three games versus three of the best teams in the league where I think you really find out what you have.
That Cowboy, the Cowboy game is interesting from that standpoint of will they be favored? Because I agree with you. Like, that's a great way to look. That's a simple way to look at it. They're going to be underdogs in the three elite games, and they're probably going to be favored. The Cowboy game is an interesting one, Seth, because I think the look-ahead line on that one was like Cowboys minus – with Dak, was like Cowboys minus 4.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be Cooper Rush. The Cowboys play the Eagles this weekend, so that's an option. Cooper Rush has done some good things as a backup. I think he's 4-1 as a backup.
He was 4-1 when he was the starter that year. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's done some good things as a backup. The Eagles are a hot team right now. If the Cowboys put up a good performance against the Eagles, and more, you know, nerve wracking, the Texans put up a stinker on Sunday, you know, could the Texans be underdogs on Monday Night Football against the Cowboys? If the recency of losing to the Lions, if they were to lose to the Lions and do so in a way where they're just clearly the lesser team, and the Cowboys put up a good performance against the Eagles this weekend, that's the one right now that I'm kind of playing wait and see on. As far as the other four, I feel pretty strongly that as long as CJ Stroud is healthy, they'll be favored in all three of their remaining division games and at home against Miami. I feel pretty strongly about that.
Fun thing to watch for that Cowboys matchup is Brandon Cook's health status, because he's not I can't remember if they made a decision on him for this week or not, but he had a complication with a knee injury he got infected or what have you. But, you know, Brandon Cook, boy, I'd love to see a Brandon Cook's scowl. It just, And please don't let Brandon Cooks go off against the Texans.
No,
I can't see that Archer celebration, all that. I don't need to see any of that.
We need Jimmy Ward to go into business for us when it comes to Brandon Cooks. We need Jimmy Ward. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just somebody update Jimmy Ward on Brandon Cooks' act when he was here the final season. And then
Jimmy Ward comes back and can be healthy and doesn't get fined at least once in the second half of the season, I'm going to be upset.
I am too.
But what are you even here for, Jimmy Ward, if you're not getting fined for unnecessary roughness? Come on, man.
He's the anti-Marshawn Lynch. Remember when Marshawn Lynch went to his podium that time and he's like, I'm just here so I don't get fined?
Yeah.
Jimmy Ward is here to get fined. He's on the team to get fined. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hitting Brandon Cooks. So this number of 10.5, how are we feeling about it right now?
Honestly, I don't feel good about it because... Yeah, let's say you're favored against the Cowboys, if Dak's not in there, it's hard to win all the games you're favored to win. And right now, I'm feeling very pessimistic about how the Texans are going to fare versus those better teams unless they figure something out offensively. So this game is huge in so many ways. Yeah. If the Texans show up and fight their butts off, and if they figure out a way to win versus the Lions, or if it's a competitive game in the fourth quarter, without Will Anderson and Nico Collins, then I'm going to say, all right, well, okay, they get Nico back. Maybe they figured if they do it without Nico Collins, it means they figured some things out offensively. Then I'm going to feel a lot better about it. But if they look the way they did last week, but do it against the Lions, yeah, I'm going to be pessimistic as hell.
That's really interesting. Okay, so the Texans, who I think Texan fans saw this as a possible Super Bowl team before the season. Here we are in week 10 now, and I'm with you, Seth. If the Texans lose this game 31-28 on a last-second field goal,
right,
and they've shown up offensively in the second half, you know, like it's a back... It looks a little like this game last night between the Bengals and the Ravens where they're back and forth, or, you know, and they lose 31-30, something like that. I'll actually be encouraged, and I hate that that's the case because that's not what you say about teams that are in line to be a Super Bowl contender. You know, you don't... Nobody, like the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Lions, I'll even say the 49ers, like teams like that, none of them are talking on their morning sports talk shows about, well, if they just show up and if they only lose by three at home, then I'm going to be really encouraged by that. And yet, that's where we are right now with this team. You know, like, they've got bigger things they need to fix than beating the Lions. You know, like, if they were to lose 31-30, but CJ's only sacked one time, mm-hmm. they score some points in the second half.
Yeah.
They look like a normal, good football team. We're not having to pay lip service we made a play here and we made a play there and a win's a win, that kind of thing.
Do they have answers to the blitz?
Yes.
And because it isn't, you know, there's times where I know Chris Sims kind of went viral for his assessment of where the Texans' offense is, and I think he's partly correct. I think the one thing where he erred was he said that they're not teaching C.J. Stroud protections. They are, but C.J. doesn't necessarily – he's not making the protection calls. Mm-hmm. That's Juice Scruggs. I think there's times where a couple things are happening. Sometimes C.J.'s not hitting his hot as quickly as he should. But there's also other times where the hots aren't available and ready and there for him when they should be. There's other times where they're with corner blitzes and things. I think CJ has been caught off guard where he didn't realize a blitz was coming. Bobby Slowick makes it more difficult by having the tight ends and everybody else bunched in to where the cornerback can either be in coverage or blitz and get there really quickly. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on there that's above and beyond just simple pass protection. So that part I agree with. It's starting to get to the point where, though, it all starts with the poor pass protection where CJ, the clock in CJ's head doesn't look like it's operating right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's times where he should go hot, but he doesn't. But it's because he doesn't trust that the protection's even going to hold for it's weird.
I'd rather they win the game, obviously. That's like the big thing. I want them to win this game, but I'll be honest with you, like, if they come in and it's a close game at the end and it's high scoring and the offense has looked good throughout the game, like if they stood toe to toe with the Lions and traded blows,
yeah.
And you say to yourself, look, if these two teams, you know, if they played again down the road, I would feel like the Texans could win that game if they had Nico Collins. Like, if they stand in toe to toe with the Lions and it comes down to the final, who has the ball last kind of thing, and they lose the game, but you didn't have Nico Collins or Will Anderson out on the field,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be happy on Monday, but I'll be encouraged on Monday that things are moving and they figured some things out, you know?
I would like to see them start to lean into this respectable rushing attack they have. Because Joe Mixon's been playing very well, and yet at the same time, okay, it's a respectable rushing attack, but it doesn't, man, when you get down in the red zone, you guys sure couldn't run the ball in the fourth quarter. And guys were getting blown up into the backfield, and you could see, all right, when it comes time to just line up and play football and run the ball, it's Joe Mixon getting what he can.
Yeah.
It's just not there yet. If they can build on that, like, that's what they need to do against the Lions, is take that next step to where you can run the ball when you need to run, and are you complementing it with a play-action passing game.
Yeah.
Then no matter what the final score is, I'm going to feel a lot better about the Texans right now. But if it looks like a disheveled mess again, I'm going to be very pessimistic about
it. Yeah, I think there's a scenario where they lose this game on Sunday night, and yet I come in feeling better about the Texans on Monday. That scenario exists, mm-hmm. Is a possibility. But as far as this season win total of 10.5, and as I mentioned earlier, I predicted 11-6 before the season, there's three games against elite teams that are going to be underdogs, and then there's the other five games where I expect them to be favorites in the other five games. What you're saying, Seth, is you think there's a better chance that they lose one of these games they're a favorite in than them stealing one of these games they're an underdog in.
Yeah. Yeah, like right now, that's where I am. I feel just after that Jets game especially where, man, I mean, D'Amico's been talking about what a letdown it was for them last year up in New York since training camp. I mean, he brought it up when it was a rainy day in camp and the offense wasn't performing well, and he said, oh, it reminded us of that Jets game where everything, the energy just wasn't right. Are we talking about these guys are getting seasonal affective disorder, and that's they can't overcome that because it was a rainy, gloomy day last year? And then this year, with no excuse for weather or anything else, they just go up and they lay an egg against one of the worst teams in the NFL, and they make Aaron Rodgers look like vintage Aaron Rodgers. That's discouraging. That's really discouraging.
They've lost three in a row to the Jets, going back to the David Culley season. I got to go look this up. I mean, the Jets have been awful for the last several years. Has any team, do the Jets have a three-game winning streak against any team over the last few years? They beat the Texans in 21, 23, and 24. I got to go look that up. And that's something that I'm only interested in probably, but you just made me think about that when you brought up last year's game. I'm like, there's another time they lost to Zach Wilson, too. Oh, that's right. Zach Wilson's rookie year here at NRG Stadium.
People who don't understand the way opponents are chosen, the actual opponents you face has nothing to do with choice. It's all set in a rigid schedule.
Formula.
But some people don't understand that, and they'll always complain and say, well, how come they always schedule this team on the road? Somebody out there is like, those schedule makers, they just keep scheduling the Jets at home against the Texans, and it's dirty.
Remember when the Texans played the Patriots every year for like five straight years? They play, including in the postseason. They play like 1 year they played them twice because they played them in the postseason. Yeah, like that was. It's because when you're not in the, who cares? It's too hard to explain on the radio. But you're right. Okay, we mentioned earlier in the show. By the way, the 5 Hour Energy fan line is our text page 713-572-4610. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610. And football super fans. We mentioned earlier that the Texans have given up 151 QB pressures this season, according to Next Gen Stats text message. Those 150 pressures feel like they were in the last two games.
Yeah, that's part of too the feelings barometer has had a lot to do with this. It just feels over the last few weeks like the floodgates have opened, and you're sitting there. And the floodgates have opened, and you didn't get the alert on your phone, so you're just standing there in your house watching the waters descend on you.
Yep.
This is like it feels like CJ is standing next to Mount Vesuvius, Sean, and he's about to get Pompeii'd. These teams are going Pompeii on his ass,
buried under lava. Yep. Text message. Sean, that's the problem. Bobby is trying to do too much and stop trying. He should stop trying to be so cute. Play football, keep it simple. Is Slowik trying to be too cute right now, Seth? That's what the texter is saying.
Is he trying to be too cute? The trick plays, I think, maybe lead to people believing that. I think the trick plays are out of desperation more than anything else. And I mean, could I paraphrase his quote on it yesterday? Is basically that, like, we got down there and we got no answers
because we suck in the red zone. Yeah.
You want Kenyon Green or Kendrick Green, or you think that all of a sudden Titus Howard's going to be a machine blocking in the red zone?
Yep.
One of the reasons you lost the Green Bay game was when they called that run on second down. Titus Howard just couldn't get to his guy, and his guy made a tackle for a loss. These guys can't block down in the red zone. They're not those dudes.
Nope.
So.
They're not those dudes. Let me read this text. This is
the highest paid guys on your team.
This is from Vidal. He says the offense needs to develop a mentality of playing angry and being nasty junkyard dogs. Totally agree.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something you develop over the course of a week. I don't think it's something you develop unless it's already in you, you know?
How do you go back in time and give those offensive linemen an unhappy childhood? You know?
Yeah.
There's just certain things. It's a problem. Sometimes with offensive line especially, you get the sense that some of them, the kids all just had too pleasant an upbringing.
Yes.
You need at least a few guys on there, or at least a couple guys that are psychotic, like, oh, man, this dude's got some voids in his development, and that's why he's a good football player.
That's
I don't feel like that. At least, I don't know their backstories. Maybe a couple of them had it really, really rough. They don't play like it.
No.
You know? Come out of it. Like you have not recovered from some of the emotional trauma of your childhood. You know? Take it out on somebody,
Indeed. Damn
it.
Yep. Text message, do you believe C.J. Stroud elevates the players around him? That's an interesting question. I think when he has time to think and throw, I think he does.
I think that he's gotten to the point where, these last few weeks, I mean, there are times where he's just not making the right decision, or he's fleeing the pocket too early. It all starts with the bad pass protection, but that's what it's turning into.
It's turning into, but I think, we have evidence that he is that kind of guy from last year. Like, Noah Brown had 250-yard games last year. Noah Brown.
Yeah.
Tank Dell was on his way to a 1,300-yard season before he broke his leg. Like, I think he is. Now, is he to the degree of, like, MVP-level Aaron Rodgers was? Like, no, not yet. But you're right. That's the scary thing is that version of C.J. Stroud getting beat out of him right now because of the pounding he's taking.
But that's where sometimes, too, is when you want him to hit the hots, and Bobby Slowick will get criticism for not giving him hots and options on blitzes. There's times where tight ends and receivers are running past the blitzer just completely oblivious to what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, get your eyes on the quarterback. Give him options. And that's a part of the... When these guys talk about how, hey, it's not just the offensive line, there's Emmys and everything. Yeah, I think there's adjustments that receivers aren't making on routes and against looks that they're supposed to be. And that makes it a hodgepodge, too. And ultimately, that comes back on the quarterback in terms of being the leader and the coach of basically the receiver's coach. But that is one of the little areas that compounds to make it feel like, man, these guys just don't know what they're doing.
Yep. All right, you ready to do the Circle of Swarm for this week, my friend?
I'm ready.
All right,
ready.
Let's do it. All
this,
right.
This is a week where I'm glad that the Circle of Swarm is small, because there's always going to be six swarm-worthy members on a team, even after a bad performance. But still,
this is
kind of tough right now.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is a tough one for sure. All right, let's do it.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men, believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
All right, we've been doing this for 7 weeks now. We started doing it in week 3. It's an offshoot of the Astros Circle of Trust. It's the Circle of Swarm. The big difference is, unlike the Astros Circle of Trust, where there can be zero in it, there can be 25 in it. There's no limit. You can trust everybody. The Circle of Swarm is an elite accolade on a week-to-week basis that is partially baked in recency, partially baked in the whole season, and partially baked in the upcoming game. And Seth and I each pick 3 Houston Texans for the Circle of Swarm each week. My friend, would you like to go first?
Yes. Okay. Going to get the offensive guys out of the way first.
Okay.
Even though, look, the defense didn't play very swarm-like in the second half last week.
No.
But Joe Mixon. Mixon. Where would this team be without Joe Mixon right now? it would be, like, as much as we question, you're going to question a GM's decisions every year. They none of them bat 1,000 or what have you.
Right.
But without Joe Mixon, this team would be SOL in a big, bad way.
Yeah.
So Joe Mixon, who again ran for over 100 yards last
year. That's a good one. And he runs in a way that's very violent that I think exudes
very swarm-like runner.
Yeah, he exudes the ethos of swarm as he runs. Mm. I think the thing that really bothers me, and this isn't Mixon's fault, is that we've been waiting for a year and a half. We've been waiting for longer than that. But with this coaching staff, we've been waiting for a year and a half for a consistently competent run game. Not these little bursts and things. Joe Mixon's gone for over 100 yards in all 5 games that he started and finished. And yet the Texans still can't put a good offensive product out on the field, even with Mixon running the ball the way that he is right now. Like, we went through his numbers over the last 3 games. And he's first in this, and he's first in that, and he's, you know, tied for second in this. Touchdowns, first downs, chunk runs, yards after contact. Like, all the things that you dream about with a running back. Oh, really? What's their record in those 2 games? 1-2. And they were kind of embarrassed in those 2 losses. I mean, I know they lost to Green Bay on a last-second field goal, but the C.J. Stroud had 86 passing yards in that game.
Yeah.
You know, the Jets, they got run off the field in the second half of that game. That's what bothers me. Finally got a good running back that's doing good things, that's swarmy as hell. You're losing football games, man. Can't be this way. Can't be this way if you're running the ball. All right, so Joe Mixon, number 1. I'll get the offensive ones out of the way, too. Tank Dell,
yay,
number 2. Tank Dell at over 100 yards receiving. That was good to see. You know, that would be one of those things, Seth, that if we hadn't seen that version of Tank yet, I would add that to the list of things for this Lions game that, hey, if I see this on Sunday and they still lose in a close game, I'll be encouraged. And you know what? I may as well add it to it. If Tank can, because it's going to be Tank and that Tank and a bunch of guys. That's what it's going to be if Nico doesn't play. And it doesn't look like Nico's going to play. Tank having another performance this week like he did last, him building off of what he did last week where he's making plays downfield. He was making plays all over. He had a 33-yard catch and run. He had the 50-yard deep shot. He was catching chain movers and things like that. But Tank is in for this week. Tank was splendid last week.
For my next selection, I'll make it another simple one. Okay. Leading the league in pressures, Danielle Hunter.
Okay.
So especially with without Will Anderson in the game. And despite, I haven't checked in on Jonathan Grenard lately, who had been playing really well. But Danielle Hunter is, for a Texans team that I think right now is blitzing more than DeMeco would really prefer to blitz, the presence of Danielle Hunter is huge, because they'd be blitzing even more and then getting exposed even more if they weren't, if they didn't have Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, I watched the entire Vikings-Colts game on Sunday Night Football this past week. You know, the game where Joe Flacco generated zero touchdowns in that game, Jonathan Grenard still playing well. Jonathan Grenard had at least three of those karate kicks that he does after plays in that game. You know,
oh, that's right. He does that big karate kick.
Does the big karate.
Clap? Does he do a clap under his leg or something?
I don't
something?
Know. I'd have to go watch. There's definitely a karate kick in there, though. All right, I'm going to keep it on the defensive line. And this is a guy, if Will Anderson doesn't play on Sunday, they're going to need a big game out of him. They're going to need the junkyard dog, the bad MF-er, the guy you want in the alley with you, as Nick Caserio described him. DeNico Autry had his first two sacks as a Texan last Sunday.
Oh, good call. DeNico, good call.
And they need him this Sunday to show up with that kind of energy again. He's probably, if Will doesn't play, DeNico Autry's probably playing 75 to 80% of the snaps, I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
He's well-rested. He missed the first six games of the season, so the tread on the tire is still very light for DeNico Autry.
The big thing about DeNico Autry is that when he's out on the edge, he's a good pass rusher. He's got good moves. He's just not nearly as explosive or as fast as Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter. When they move him down inside on third down, then he's scary, because he can really just, he's a combination of strength and speed rushing against guards that's hard for those guys to handle, or when he slants down inside. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him, and he's got to continue doing what he did, but it's still not a direct replacement for Will Anderson.
No,
I'm glad he's back. Mario Edwards comes back next week, and there's that part I feel pretty good about.
Yeah.
Like I feel good that there's heavy representation by the defensive line.
Yeah, no, thank God they signed DeNico Autry, you know.
And Autry plays in a swarm-like fashion.
Does he ever?
I said this when the Texans traded away Khalil Davis, I said, it stinks to see him go, but I understand the move. A bunch of people started arguing with me that he wasn't actually that good. I'm like, no, no, I know. I see. The move makes sense. But that dude, whenever he showed up and did make a play, is a kind of a roll backup player. He did it with a lot of violence and anger.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
Yeah,
I think that's why he was kind of an under-the-radar cult favorite amongst a lot of people, because he showed up with bad intentions.
He did.
So I'll miss Khalil Davis, not because of extreme production or anything like that, but I liked seeing him on the field. I felt like that was a swarm-like player. I'm going to go, I think this might be the first time we've done this. The guy hasn't played in a couple weeks, and yet I'm so impressed with his swarm-like demeanor and style of play that Azeez Alshire is back in the circle of swarm. Having done anything last week except help the Texans lose by being injured. Yeah, I'm happy that Azeez Alshire looks
the
like
the first
coming back.
Ever returning injured player in the circle of swarm. And I'm with you. We're so caught up in Nico possibly not playing and Will Anderson possibly not playing. I do feel like the return of Azeez Alshire is getting a little bit kind of lost in the wash here. That is a huge, and I feel like maybe part of that too is that the linebackers were okay while he was out. The linebackers weren't the reason they were losing games when Azeez Alshire went out with that knee injury after the New England game. Like, they didn't lose the Green Bay game because of the linebackers. They didn't lose the Jets game because of Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen and Henry Toa. But Azeez Alshire is just different than those guys. His ability to, he's been good in coverage this year. His ability to go sideline to sideline, his leadership that he brings, like, he is a dog. Like, this.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he's one of those guys that, as they're this heavy under, like, he's the opposite of the offensive line of this team. You know what I mean? Like, Azeez Alshire feels like he's a guy that would lose a limb to win this game on Sunday.
Well, and especially, you know, the way they operate now, with the whole green dot guy, the guy that gets to have the speakers in his headphone and in his helmet, the guy that's going to be on the field for all three downs, that's a big deal for this Texans defense to have a guy that's the signal caller that can be out there to where you're not making decisions based on, okay, well, gosh, this guy, boy, we need to have the play caller out there, but he's not that good in pass coverage and what have you. That's, you don't have that bind anymore,
right,
with Azeez Alshon. Not that he's brilliant in pass coverage or anything, but as him directing guys, getting guys lined up, and also able to go sideline to sideline to tackle well, all those things, there's a lot above and beyond just his actual stat line that matters with Azeez Alshon.
I like that we've opened up a new precedent, that you don't have to have played the previous few weeks to be in the circle of swarm. I like that it's become that sort of color outside the lines and be very subjective about this. Good job, Seth. Is it a lock that Nico Collins is in the circle of swarm the week that we know he's coming back?
I'm a revolutionary in that regard.
You are.
Sean,
you're a swarm revolutionary.
That's what I was thinking about. I was looking ahead to Nico, and I thought, well, I put him in the circle of swarm, and you're damn right I will.
You should.
Yes.
You should.
Excuse my language.
All right. Last one for me and for the circle of swarm this week, and it's Derek Stingley Jr. Derek Stingley was really good against the Jets. 7 targets, 2 receptions, just 14 yards, and he had 2 pass breakups in that game. Derek Stingley's had a good season so far.
Stingley is, and he's doing it in kind of a low-key, quiet way that good cornerbacks tend to do.
Yep.
You become the guy that teams don't want to challenge or bother challenging.
Yep.
So that part of it's been good. You don't hear much from Derek Stingley. It's usually for good reasons.
Yep.
So, and I think that's where Jeff Okuda coming back from IR, it gets interesting. And then Jimmy Ward coming back, too. I think now where the Texans have blitzed on third down a lot, you're going to have more options now to where you can blitz on third down, but you don't have to have Jalen Petrie covering Devontae Adams with very little safety help over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, like on that play where Devontae Adams just had a free lane to the top, I could see where Jimmy Ward maybe could have anticipated that a little bit better than Kalen Bullock. Like some of the veteran savvy stuff, I like having Jimmy Ward back there. I love having Kalen Bullock back there for his playmaking ability, but I think D'Amico's going to kind of be able to choose his spots for where he uses which guy.
Yeah. So that's the circle of swarm for this week. Joe Mixon, Tank Dell, Danielle Hunter, D'Amico Autry, Azeez Alshire, and Derek Stingley Jr. I like that. I like that. That's a good circle of six right there. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Okay, I can answer this for Seth. Who would you rather have a tackle, Trevor Penning or Titus? Seth would rather have Titus.
By a million.
Yeah, by a million.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll
say this over and over again. The tackles aren't playing bad.
Yeah.
They're not playing. Trevor Penning's a bad offensive tackle.
Bad.
He just, like, once a game, he drives a cornerback, like, into the benches, and people think all of a sudden he's tough. He gets destroyed by pass rushers. So, no, I'll take Titus Howard. Titus and Laramie have been good offensive linemen this year.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been the issue. Now, when it comes to the overall mentality, the offensive line, and everything else like that, that's good. You know, they're not my dream offensive tackles.
No, not even close. Wheatstraw says, "What's Mike Brizell up to these days? Can't be worse than Kenyon Green."
Somebody, I was watching, is Cody Stute. I think I was on Cody Stute's live stream. Somebody had asked, it was, or maybe it was Landry and Cody together. Somebody asked about Ben Jones because he's out there. He's out there. He can play guard. You can move Juice Scruggs over to left guard or something. Yeah, Ben Jones didn't play football last year because he's had a boatload of concussions.
Yeah.
And you don't want Ben Jones to get to the point where all of a sudden he's eating bugs not on a dare, but because that's just what he does.
That's what he thinks is
nutritious.
Because
his brain is so fried up. Yeah, I think Ben Jones needs to... Plus, he's got to be like 36 by now, isn't he?
He was drafted. He was drafted in 2012. So he's in his mid-30s. Yeah, I mean, he and Brandon Brooks were in that. Ironically, if I'm not mistaken, if we want to go deep on this, I believe that that Ben Jones was taken with one of the picks that was in the D'Amico Ryans trade.
2012 draft. He's 35 years old right now.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Yep.
I don't think he's coming back, man. And good for him. You get
a bunch of money, man.
You're 35, yeah.
Go live life. Yeah, absolutely.
He's probably driving the same pickup he bought with his signing bonus his rookie year.
Hell,
you know,
yeah. Text message to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. Do you think CJ will go on another world tour with his BFF Micah Parsons this offseason, talking trash to other players? Here's the thing about that. Well, first of all, things have gone backwards for both CJ and Micah this year. Like last year Micah Parsons was an elite player. CJ was the offensive rookie of the year. People were willing to listen and to all their shenanigans and whatnot. Like, if if the Texans are disappointing for the rest of the year and Micah Parsons has a disappointing season and the Cowboys wind up 5-12, that does affect people wanting to hear their opinions on things. But this is where the part that it's characterized as talking trash. I don't think CJ's talking trash. I think he's giving his honest opinion on things.
With Micah, especially, it wasn't talking trash. It was more just like shutting down idiocy.
Yeah.
So, Micah would say things like the NFC East was the best division in football. And just
because of the preseason win totals.
Because of the preseason projection from the prior season. It was easy. That wasn't even smack talking.
No.
I think the only real smack talking that I can remember was him talking about the Colts, and they took care of that business at least.
Yep.
The Colts linebackers go to. I guarantee you that the Colts fan base is not happy about the podcasting linebackers up in Indianapolis.
That's
another thing that CJ didn't. CJ's not hosting his own podcast, and he's not doing it in season or anything. Whereas the Colts podcasting linebackers are doing a weekly podcast and talking smack about CJ all offseason, and then losing, getting swept by the Texans and CJ Stroud during the regular season.
Text message: Laremy isn't an issue. Dude is the most penalized lineman in the NFL by a lot. He's dialed that back. To be fair to Laremy, we killed him for that when he was getting.
No.
We destroyed him for that.
No, and it's very much one of the things that keeps him being a genuinely elite overall offensive lineman. I get so sick of these people propping up because they're fueled by the O-line propaganda machine. Ooh, the PFF pass rush ratings and rankings. Like, what? He's an offensive lineman. Have 40% of the plays on any team in the league are going to be run plays. Why don't you show all of his grades if you're going to go the PFF route?
Absolutely.
He's not a complete offensive tackle, but he's a good offense. He's a really good pass protector. He's an okay enough run blocker, but he's not the issue right now other than his penalties. But that's one of the things that keeps him from being elite. The actual all-pro offensive tackles tend to have two or three false starts total in a
year,
season.
Yeah.
If any at all. Trent Williams, you'd have to go back 4.5 seasons for him to get as many false starts as Laremy Tunsil has.
Sounds about right.
Somehow he manages to do it without trying to time the snap count down to the 100th of a second.
Go figure. Yeah. Go figure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday. Speaking of the offensive line, this is how you know it might be an issue. The Texans offensive line coach met with the media yesterday. I like this. I like that they did this. What do we feel like his evaluations are, though, on a few guys here on this offensive line that are under heavy scrutiny? We will have that for you. Hear from Chris Strauser, the O-line coach, coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Chris Strauser met with the media yesterday. You don't see position coaches individually get trotted out in front of the media very often. Usually when they do, it's all of them talking to the media. That, I think, is probably a pretty good indicator that This is a big topic, the Texans offensive line, and this is something that's making Texan fans nervous. It's something that's getting C.J. Stroud banged up, all of those things. So I thought this was a good idea yesterday. Here was Chris Strauser, the offensive line, first talking about handling the stunts that they're seeing up front.
Stunts are always a challenge. I mean, there's a reason that defenses do stunt on third down because there's some challenges with it. So to me, it all goes back to starting with just like being really good at one-on-one pass protection, because you get that done. And then the next step, the next phase is to be able to handle a stunt. And a lot of what goes into handling a stunt is the same stuff that goes into being a really good one-on-one protector. So, you know, there's a lot of little things that we know that as we really studied, we had that extra 3 days to really kind of go back and look at some stuff and really see some stuff that consistently has shown up as issues and stuff. Again, like I said, that I need to go back and do a better job as a coach to get these guys locked into better and find a way to drill it better and make sure when we show up on Sunday that everybody's got complete confidence in what we're doing.
It's one of the hardest things in just in football or any sport, really, is that it's always back to basics. Like, you never get to a point where you're not focusing, hyper-focusing on the basics, because you've always got 29 different things you're thinking about, and then your basics start to slide. And I think with the interior offensive line for the Texans, there's times where you're watching them, and keeping your shoulders square to the line of scrimmage is a big deal for offensive linemen to be able to handle, you know, to be able to get your pass set, but to see things crossing your face, everything else like that. And the Texans at times with their offensive linemen on the interior, they look like they're opening the door. Again, trying to chase one person that just came through the door, they're turning completely to attack that while somebody else creeps in the other way. And it's as simple as trusting your basic technique that has flummoxed them at times. And that's when guys start getting beat fast. That's when you're given short corners for guys to run around. You're getting ear holds when we see a defensive lineman slanting, and your left guard has his eyes locked on a potential blitzer, and a defensive lineman from the other side just cold cocks him, and it clears the way for a linebacker to blitz. All that stuff starts with just the very basics of your footwork and how are your shoulders positioned and everything else like that. And it's frustrating, because there's part of me that wants to crush Chris Strauser for it, but then there's part of me that remembers, oh yeah, these guys are professional football
players.
They're
grown men, yes.
Yeah. Like, this is, do I need to go back and blame your high school coach for that? I think they probably coached it up pretty well at Atascocita High.
Right.
You know, it's just like, at some point it's on you. Get your basics right.
Well, and they did it well at times last year. Like, that's the thing. Like, how do you get to this place? You know, it's like a golfer who gets the yips, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the same thing goes in against the run game, too. They really struggled early on to deal with slanting defensive linemen.
Yeah.
And it was enough that it was kind of unclear whether guys were getting destroyed that bad or the rules that they had were kind of confusing for how they passed off defensive players and the decisions they were supposed to make. I think they have improved a lot in that regard. And at first with Joe Mixon, it felt like a whole lot of like, well, he's just making something out of nothing quite a bit. He's had more genuinely well-blocked run plays in the last couple weeks than he had early in the season.
Yep, agreed. Here's Chris Strauser on the group as a whole. He says the offensive line, this is a prideful group.
We believe we got the best guy in the NFL, and our guys love playing for that guy, and just the tremendous plays that this guy makes really for us.
Hang on, back up, man. Back up. He's talking about C.J. Stroud right there, so start the clip over there. Yeah, the he that he's talking about there. They're talking about being prideful and protecting C.J. Stroud.
We believe we got the best guy in the NFL, and our guys love playing for that guy. And just the tremendous plays that this guy makes really for us, is hugely important. And so, nobody's happy with the fact that we're struggling in pass protection right now. I mean, everybody wants to do better, starting with myself, but, you know, everybody across the board wants to do better. And so, just like you said, it is a prideful group, and those guys care tremendously about taking care of our quarterback.
Okay, I'll remind people, they're in the middle of three straight primetime games right now. Like, they're in the middle of three games that the nation is watching. And the last one was the one that the least amount of people are going to be watching. There's going to be a ton of people watching this Sunday game. The Cowboys suck, but they always draw eyeballs. There are going to be a ton of people watching that Monday night game. If you're prideful, then you're proud. Like, you will show up this Sunday and put – I'm not going to say that they're going to win the game, but the offensive line needs to show up and look like they need to look like the level to which they were drafted and paid You know,
if listen, this is the thing. If Jarrett Patterson can just play passable football at left guard in pass protection, so they can pass because he's playing passably. There's times where versus the blitz, the Texans are trying so hard to help out the interior offensive line that they don't have answers for all the blitzes because they don't have free guys who are go back to the Green Bay game a few weeks ago when that corner blitz came clean.
Yeah.
And I know it was just, you know, your feeling is, how does Dalton Schultz not pick up that blitzer? It's because they were in turn protection and Dalton Schultz is locked into that defensive end. And it's not his guy. Like, it would be a hell of a play if you were able to get eyes out on that cornerback and make the block, because it's not his responsibility. That's part of the issue, because you can't trust your guys to just pass block and to just win man pass blocking opportunities. So, like, I think they'll get locked into fewer of those all or nothing pass protection type schemes if Patterson can just be credible as a pass protector.
Yep.
And then we'll build from there, but can you be credible as a pass protector?
All right, a couple evaluations here. The offensive line so far this year, the two most scrutinized have been the two young players, Kenyon Green at left guard, Juice Scruggs at center. Kenyon is out of the picture now, but definitely a topic. Here is Chris Strauser's thoughts on Kenyon Green.
Kenyon's done great. I mean, really, honestly, like, if we're looking at the big picture of where Kenyon was when I got here and the type of offseason he had, the type of training camp that he had, came out week one against the Colts, really playing on fire, did really well in the run game, didn't have the same pass protection opportunities that week one that maybe we did as the season went on. By no means is it one guy. That, to me, that's an easy out. You know, we know there's a lot of guys involved. And, you know, Kenyon, I really think of this really being his rookie season, right? That first year he was here, played some, got hurt. Last year he didn't play at all. This year, coming back off an injury and really getting back into the mix. And so I think he went through some, you know, also this is his first time in our offense here, right? So he went through some, you know, typical rookie struggles, but by no means is Kenyon the only guy.
Okay. That was not unexpected. I didn't expect him to throw Kenyon under the bus. You know, hey, it's not just Kenyon. Hey, this is basically his rookie year. The scary thing about that, I guess, Seth, is that if the organization as a whole shares that view on Kenyon Green, they're like, hey, this is basically his rookie year. You know, like, hey, 2022, that was Lovey's team. You know, this pre-D'Amico. I mean, that's what they were saying about Christian Harris. They didn't even count 2022 live. Remember, D'Amico said, hey, this is basically Christian's rookie year. So for Kenyon, they're erasing 2022, where he was terrible. Mm-hmm. Their 2023 didn't play. So this is basically his rookie year. The scary thing is, if you have lost faith in Kenyon Green as a football player, which I think a lot of people have, if the organization views it that way, guess who your starting left guard is going to be next season?
Right. Well, you know what, though, Sean? I'm glad you made this point earlier in the week. Can you at least treat it like a competition?
Yeah.
It is. We had one very adamant texter during training camp who I can only guess that he might be related to Jarrett Patterson because he was that adamant about it. And yet, I think he made a good point, which is, all right, so they're just handing these jobs to Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green and acting like... I mean, this is where I feel like sometimes D'Amico's got to eat his own chow, you know? And like, okay, if it's about competition, then why is Kenyon Green being treated like he's an all-pro returning from injury?
Or he's Laramie Tunsil or something.
Or he's a vested veteran who's returning from injury. Why is there not actual... It never felt like there was actual competition there. And they can't possibly do that. And not to mention the fact that now, we've barely touched on this. Oh, yeah, what was one of the issues with Kenyon Green originally? He got injured all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, why isn't he playing now? It's injured. Not because the Texans benched him.
Right.
It's because he's injured.
Yeah. Yep. Let's get this Juice Scruggs in here. This is Chris Strauser on center Juice Scruggs.
There's always going to be extra responsibility on the center, whether it's pass, run, whatever it is. And again, I think of this at center a little bit for Juice as his rookie year. He missed most of last year, two-thirds of it, and then came in and played guard. And so this is still some newness to him with it, but by no means does it fall on him. I mean, he's really has done a good job, and he's progressed each week.
That to me feels like a more accurate assessment than the Kenyon Green one.
Yeah.
The one on Juice right there.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think that's where Juice is, too. Where, like, if Juice were operating in a different environment, I I'd be cool with him for being a guy that's in himself a rookie in a lot of ways, just because this is his first experience at center. And in an offense where he's making the pass protection calls, I think he's improved on the mental side of things as the season has come along. I'm happy with the I think there's a lot of upside there still. So if he'd been playing with a veteran guard to his left this entire time, I think people would feel a lot better about Juice Scruggs. Yeah. I think he's playing better at center than Jarrett Patterson did as center last year. Mm. It's just that people were kind of pleasantly surprised by Jarrett Patterson at the time, and I understand where in terms of upside. Yeah, maybe I don't know which one of those guys would be a better center over time, but right now, I see some people wanting to move Juice Scruggs to left guard and have Jarrett Patterson at center. I just don't see that. Scruggs was not good at guard.
Right.
He wasn't. I didn't feel promising after his rookie year performance at guard. I felt like, nope, that guy's a center. And likewise with Jarrett Patterson, I see a lot of guard elements to his physique, the way he plays, all of that.
How undermanned will the Texans be on Sunday? They will be undermanned, it would appear. But let's go glass half full. There are guys coming back. What impact can these guys have on the Texans getting a win on Sunday? That is next. But first, your injury report.
The Mokarem injury lawyer's injury report. The big two, Will Anderson did not practice. Nico Collins has not been designated to return from IR yet and did not practice. So pessimism reigns with those guys. The Texans will get back Azeez Alshire. They possibly get back Jerry Hughes, who had limited participation yesterday. On the Lions side of things, Aiden Hutchinson's leg is still recovering from being blown to smithereens. The Lions signed Za'Darius Smith, who's did not practice for personal reasons yesterday. So that's the one to watch, is whether Za'Darius Smith will play as the edge rusher for the Lions this week or not. That's your injury report, brought to you by Mokarem Injury Lawyers.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.